the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
What is it about Americans that we suffer from what they call the Western disease, heart disease, cancer, diabetes? What is it that causes it? Is it diet, lack of exercise? And how do we treat it? For most of us, if you come across a disease, it's taking a pill or surgery. Well, what if there's a different approach? And that's the topic of today's discussion. Joining me on the program is Dr. Steven Saltzman. He's written a book called Dancing with Darwin: Challenge Therapies for Optimal Health, Vitality, Longevity, and Peak Performance. Doctor, as we begin, I wonder if you just might share, before we get into your book, your background with our audience, please.
Sure. And Jim, it's great to be with you and your audience. I'm a Johns Hopkins trained anesthesiologist. I finished my training in 95. I've been practicing anesthesia ever since and still do. But I'm a unique physician in that I also strongly believe and also practice in alternative therapies. I'm trained in anti-aging and regenerative medicine and oxidative medicine. And I have worked on a kind of a unique medical model, and that's what I present in the book, Dancing with Darwin.
When we take a look at American medicine today, you have a chart in your book. It's called Disease Progression. It starts out with, you know, you have vibrant health, then you get psychological stress, followed by toxicity, hormone imbalance, nutrient deficiency that leads to decreased oxygen utilization, decreased energy. Then you get into what we call degeneration, acidosis, hypoxia, compensation, and then chronic disease. Explain that diagram and relate it to what most Americans are experiencing.
Sure. And it sounds like a lot that you just ran through, but the basic point of that chart is to present to people the fact that we face modern day stresses that are unavoidable. And those are the things like psychological stress, toxicity, hormonal imbalance, and nutrient deficiency. And if those things progress or we don't intervene intelligently, it leads to effects on our mitochondria. And those are the energy producing factories of our cells. And the effects work on our oxygen system. And so what our listeners need to know is that effects on our oxygen system over time, very slowly, that's what attacks our ability to make oxygen and have it in abundant supply. And as our amount of oxygen decreases, we attempt to compensate and our bodies can become acidic. We drive oxygen out of the tissues and we steal nutrients that we need to maintain a state of alkalinity from less urgent supplies. And that is what predisposes us to chronic illness and disease.
When we talk about the American medical system, you talk in your book, we treat symptoms, we overspecialize. The drug industry limits our knowledge, research findings are poorly communicated. And you talk about for a lot of doctors, a lot of their knowledge leaving medical school and in medical school is provided to them by the pharmaceutical industry. Doesn't that in some ways limit their exposure to alternative therapies, number one? And number two, bias to some degree their protocols for recovery?
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. But what I refer to in the book as the medical establishment is powerful. And it controls not only how physicians think and act, but what we're able to offer our patients. And that's just not my perspective in the book. I reference multiple studies that show the majority of knowledge base of our physicians is coming from pharmaceutical-derived materials on the marketing side, on the publicity side, and even the funding of our research. And so, yes, it limits our knowledge base, but it does something even more dangerous than that. And what it does is it creates the perception that alternative therapies or non-pharmaceutical-based therapies are somehow suspect or should be viewed in a suspect way. And as you and I both know, that couldn't be further from the truth. But it is an uphill battle. Getting this material out is challenging because the medical establishment is powerful and it likes physicians to work in a very tight, within tight reins.
So as we talk about this system, obviously, you know, there are a lot more doctors now talking about nutrition, talking about alternative therapies. You talk about something. Is it hermesis that you want to get into a state of? Explain what that is.
Sure. And and the term is hormesis.
Hormesis.
And it may not be something that your audience has heard before, but it's actually our most powerful, our most ancient, and our most preserved science and physiology. We share it with every species. We share it with plants. We share it with animals. And before we dive into that in more detail, this is a different approach than typical alternative therapies that, you know, there's a million different diet protocols, there's a million different nutraceuticals. And I would just like to submit, you know, in my opinion, that's not where the power is. You know, if the answer was diet or supplements, we'd be the healthiest people on earth because those are billion-dollar industries in the alternative world. But what I have found, and I've done a lot of research after medical school, is it really does come down to hormesis. And, you know, we really need to think about for 99% of our history, humans lived in the presence of frequent physical and environmental stress. And what hormesis is those appropriate and strategic physical and environmental stresses that condition us, that increase our adaptability, our resilience, and they make us more able to handle the stress that we're facing in the moment, but really any stress that comes our way. And I believe, as well as researchers from every scientific discipline I know, hormesis holds the answers for what we are facing today.
Now, when you start getting into therapies, let's begin with in chapter 2, you talk about cyclic exercise and interval training. I was exposed to interval training when I read a book called Ready, Set, Go by Phil Campbell, who you make reference in, basically invented the Sprint 8 program. So let's talk about cyclic exercise and how interval training plays a huge role, and especially in human growth hormones.
Sure. So it's a great question. I love Phil Campbell's work. He's an endorser of my work as well. I reference him multiple times in the book. And I think to frame the discussion, so there's a lot of different hormetic therapies. My book discusses and devotes a chapter to each one of the physical and environmental stresses and challenges that I believe hold tremendous potential for us. In the exercise chapter, I most promote two that you mentioned, cyclic exercise and interval training. The cyclic exercise is a basic form of exercise that stresses the recovery side of exercise. Many people listening to us may not know that exercise is intended to be a two-part process of equal balance, and that is exertion and recovery. Most of us are maybe overtrained on the exertion side, but don't have recovery skills. And cyclic exercise is about quickly getting your heart rate up and then devoting time for recovery. The interval training and the one proposed by Phil Campbell, that's a totally different animal. That's an intense workout with eight cycles, 30 seconds maximum performance at maximum activity, and then a 90-second recovery. And the full workout involves eight of those cycles. And if done correctly, as you pointed out, Jim, that protocol can raise your growth hormone levels and make them equivalent to someone taking the non-natural, non-safe forms of injectable growth hormone. And I just want to point out, growth hormone is the fitness hormone for adults. It's the only substance that can build muscle and burn fat. And an exercise regimen designed to elevate growth hormone is probably the single greatest goal we can have in our exercise regimen.
In your book, you also talk about inflammation, how that is one reason that many athletes plateau in their performance. Let's talk about that and how do you get around it?
Sure. And not only does inflammation plateau athletic activity, inflammation also predisposes us to disease. And, you know, if you take a step back, almost every disease that we're struggling with today, it's either low levels of oxygen, inflammation, or excess stress. But to concentrate on the inflammation side, you know, how do you treat it? Well, you may be surprised to learn that the greatest anti-inflammatory is actually oxygen. And the more oxygen, but I'm not talking about oxygen in the environment, I'm talking about oxygen in our system. And most of us may not realize that oxygen is a precious resource at the level of our cells. And we may think we have plenty in the environment. Oxygen levels actually are decreasing in our environment, and low levels, it really is a precious resource in the single digits when it gets into our cells and into our mitochondria. And when we don't have enough, we predispose ourselves to inflammation. That's true for a disease, and it's true for an athlete overtraining. And so anything that works on recovery and enhancing oxygen levels reduces the inflammatory response.
You know, I want to move on to a chapter that you have, which really kind of surprised me, and I'd really like to talk more about this. And this is oxygen therapies. And the reason I really want to get into this, I have a good friend that's a founder of a major commercial exercise equipment company, and he has been going through something that you talk about in your book, hyperbaric therapy for himself, but he's also used it. He has a son that has leukemia, and he's kept his son alive for well over 5 years through this therapy. So let's begin with it. What is it in the different forms?
Sure. So hyperbaric oxygen therapy is simply a technique where we enclose ourselves and the pressure around us is increased. It's like going into a big balloon or a steel chamber, and the pressure is increased on us. And the medical benefit comes when we increase the pressure on us, we drive more oxygen into the body, into the body's tissues. So right now, as you and I are talking to each other, not in a hyperbaric chamber, the only oxygen delivery we get is oxygen we breathe and that our circulation distributes. That's what happens with 98% of our oxygen delivery. We have a very small amount that's dissolved in the plasma. The plasma is the liquid portion of our blood. And that chemistry and that math changes in a hyperbaric chamber because we drive more oxygen into the plasma, into the cerebral spinal fluid, and into our lymphatic circulation. And we're talking about a 6 to 10-fold increase in the amount of oxygen. So imagine now being able to bring oxygen to parts of the body where your body can't normally bring it to, because the oxygen brought to us by hyperbaric oxygen therapy is molecularly smaller than the hemoglobin molecule that normally carries oxygen. And so it's a way of flooding the system with extra oxygen. And let me say this, I think this will really shape the therapy. At the level of the cell, the available oxygen is the currency of the cell. So you're a financial sense guru in terms of money and investing. Well, at the level of the cell, the financial sense and the currency is oxygen. The more you have, the more cellular work you can do, the more fighting, the more immunity, the more tissue repair, the more control of inflammation. And so the more oxygen, the healthier we are. That's why athletes like this therapy. But those struggling with the disease, it's crucial for, and it helps a wide variety of clients.
Now, in your book, you talk about different methods of receiving this oxygen therapy. One is, as you mentioned, the hyperbaric chamber. I want to talk about two other forms. One is called EWAT? You know, I looked this up when I read your book, and there's actually companies out there that make these compressors that fill sort of like a 5-foot airbag, and you put on this mask that you breathe in this oxygen while you're on your treadmill or exercise bike or rowing machine, whatever it is that you're doing in your cardio exercise. Let's get into that and the differences between them.
Sure. That second therapy that you're mentioning is called EWAT. It stands for exercise with oxygen therapy. And that involves breathing high flow oxygen with exercise. And to just make a distinguishing point, I personally reserve hyperbaric oxygen therapy for those patients who are compromised and not able to exercise. If someone can exercise, I like to offer them EWAT as a way of delivering more oxygen. And let me just give you an idea how much more oxygen can be delivered with an appropriate EWAT system. Right now, we're breathing 21% oxygen. But if we were to breathe closer to 100, there could be a 4 or 5-fold increase in oxygen just by breathing a higher amount of it. And then imagine increasing your cardiac output and oxygen delivery because of exercise 2 to 3-fold over normal. So EWAT offers us the potential to deliver 10 to 15 times the amount of circulating oxygen all throughout our body. And the EWAT relies on our body's own circulatory system, our heart and lungs, to pump and circulate that blood, that oxygenated rich blood. But I can tell you it's a tremendous oxygen therapy. And I have adaptations that I can put on those systems to enhance the challenge component of the work that I do.
You know, doctor, I was discussing your book with my holistic doctor, and he's very familiar with oxygen. He uses, for some people, he'll have oxygen delivered to the home where people, you know, they could be sitting in bed or in a reading chair, and they do 15, 20 minutes with an intake of oxygen. Explain the difference. You said the hyperbaric is for more of those that are impaired, they can't exercise. Then you talked about EWAT. What about just having oxygen delivered and just sit in a chair and breathe pure oxygen for 20 minutes? What's the difference between those two?
Yeah. And so let's say it this way. The goal is all those therapies recognize the more oxygen, the better health and vitality for the person getting more oxygen. So they're all on the right page. The question is, where's the most return for the investment? Hyperbaric is clear. You know, we showed the amount, a 6 to 10-fold increase in the amount of circulating oxygen. EWAT is clear in that that can deliver 10 to 15 times the amount of oxygen. The least effective is simply breathing a little bit of oxygen through a small nasal cannula that sits in the nose. If that's a 2 or 4 or 5 liter breathing, that's going to do the least of the three, but it's still effective. And that's why we have oxygen concentrators and oxygen delivery for people with bad lung disease and other end-stage organ disease, because it still benefits them some. But the real return for the investment is either on hyperbarics or on EWAT. If you're going to go that route, those are the routes I recommend because of the additional amounts of oxygen they're able to provide.
Now, is there any limitations? Is there any coaching? Is this something you need to do under doctor's instructions? For example, if I wanted to get an EWAT machine and put it in my gym and use it when I'm on a treadmill or a rowing machine, could I do that?
Yeah, you could certainly do that. And I have good information on my website and in the book to talk about how to get that. I have some products identified to get people started. But I think the important point to mention is that for somebody who's compromised, it's good to have the guidance of a physician. I work with some elite athletes that really want to push themselves. That requires medical oversight because I'm combining ample surplus amounts of oxygen and transient amounts of low oxygen to make additional challenges. And so, you know, if somebody just wants to increase the amount of circulating oxygen, they can do that on their own. And I laid out a process of how that can happen. But for somebody who's compromised and wants, they really should have some medical oversight. I also want to mention, I use oxygen to prepare people for challenge. For those people who are compromised or have pain conditions or haven't exercised in a while, I use oxygen as a supportive prehab therapy to get people to the point where I can then challenge them. And we'll talk about how that works, I hope, in just a few minutes.
All right. Well, let's move on to your next chapter, which is ozone therapies. Explain what it is and how do you do this?
Sure. So there couldn't be more misunderstanding about what ozone is and how it works. You know, a lot of people hear the word ozone and they think toxin. That couldn't be further from the truth. Ozone is simply a charged form of oxygen. You know, the oxygen you and I are breathing is two oxygen atoms bound together. That's O2. ozone is simply O3. It's a third unstable oxygen atom combined. And what ozone is also a natural substance. It's produced in nature, and our bodies produce ozone naturally. What it can do for us is it's an enhanced oxygen therapy, but it also has powerful immune support capacities. It can reduce pain. It can reduce inflammation. It can deliver more oxygen, but it also has powerful inputs on the immune system that can last for days after an ozone therapy.
So, I mean, how does one get this? Is it something like a machine like the EWOT, or is it a hyperbaric chamber? What is it?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that, because it's ozone. Medical use of ozone needs to be produced from medical grade oxygen and the use of a ozone generator. And the way it works is you take oxygen, and this needs to be very precise and very well controlled. But when oxygen is given an electric charge, ozone is produced, and it needs to be controlled and precise. So medical grade oxygen and an ozone generator can be used to form ozone. Ozone is an unstable gas that then needs to be used quickly, because it will dissipate back to oxygen in about 30 minutes or so.
And then also in your book, you also talk about fasting. Now, I've got quite a few friends that have gone on what they call intermittent fasting, where they only eat from, like, for example, 11 to 6 each day. So they basically give their body almost 18 hours of digestion.
Yeah. Not only are they giving their bodies 18 hours of digestion, they're optimizing their circadian rhythms. They're enhancing their body's ability to repair. I mean, fasting is so powerful, and we really don't understand how powerful it is. And before we talk about it, let me just share this one study that I put in the book. There were researchers that fed mice unhealthy, high-fat food, and they gave it to them 24 hours a day, and they saw how much the mice consumed. And then they gave the same amount of unhealthy, high-fat food to another group of mice, but they had to eat it in a 10 or 12-hour period of time. And after 6 weeks, the time-restricted eating mice had lower markers of inflammation, more lean muscle mass, less fat mass, better heart function, higher volumes of mitochondria, and improved cellular repair, and their exercise capacity was greater. And this was from eating unhealthy, high-fat food. And so clearly, there's a lot that the body likes a fasted state. It's designed to enter a fasting state, and most Americans eat in a 15-hour window. And what we've learned, and the research in this field is exploding, what we've learned is that every cell in the body and all of our organs have clock functions of when certain genes are on and optimally active, and times when those genes are less active and in decline. And so you can imagine what happens if we eat at a time when the majority of our metabolic genes are turned off. That is a setup for our blood sugars to elevate, to produce inflammation, for us to digest food poorly, for food to sit in our stomach, for sleep to be poor. And so fasting is incredibly powerful for optimizing our circadian rhythms and really preparing us to be as healthy as we can be.
Doctor, what about the type of foods we eat? You know, there's just a gazillion diet books out there, from the paleo diet, the keto diet, vegetarian, vegans, Mediterranean diet, you name it. I mean, it gets very confusing. It's hard to kind of fathom which one is really right. Any opinion in terms of, for example, the foods we eat?
Well, it's a great question, and we could talk about that at length. I will tell you the thing, you know, I stress to my clients, obviously we want whole foods and limited or no processing. I like raw foods. I like cultured foods, foods that have live and beneficial bacteria. I like limited animal protein. But rather than a diet, there's a part of the book where I talk about when we eat matters more than what we eat. So obviously, You know, if you think about that mice study, those powerful benefits didn't come from a diet and they didn't come from good quality food. They came because of the hormetic effect of fasting. And so what I'm saying to you and the audience is when we eat is more important than what we eat, as long as we're making intelligent choices that support us. And so what I tell clients is work on fasting. Paleo is great, but if somebody's eating, if someone's eating paleo type foods that still have some carbohydrates in them and they're eating them, you know, in a 15 hour window, they're never getting to a fasted state. And getting to a fasted state using what I talk about in the book as time restricted eating, that's where the biggest benefits are. And I believe that's why no one diet has stood out among all of the others, because the best answer and the highest truth, I believe, is time-restricted eating.
Now, you also have a chapter, cold exposure and autonomic integration. Explain what that is. And I think about jumping into a cold swimming pool in the middle of winter and I just shudder.
Well, let's start with that analogy. That's a great point to talk about this. And I just want to remind the audience that hormetic therapies are about reintroducing the physical and environmental challenges that evolution designed for us 2.5 million years ago. And these are the things we're most responsive to. It's not a drug. It's not a supplement. It's not a diet. The things that evolution hardwired us to react to are the physical and environmental challenges that I'm talking about in the book. And so cold exposure. And let's go with that analogy you said. Let me paint two very different pictures in the eyes and ears of our listeners. So imagine you've heard of a polar plunge. So that's when someone jumps into freezing water and has done no preparation and has no idea what's going to happen. It's a sense of chaos and panic. But if you looked at the physiology, you would see that person's heart rate would go very high. Their muscles would tense. The water burns, the breathing stops or becomes shallow, and their mind races. It's a very scary place. And believe it or not, uncontrolled cold exposure is lethal for some people. But if you contrast that with someone who's trained in cold exposure, they can enter the cold in a state of calm and focus. And their body behaves intelligently. The blood vessels in their extremities constrict. Blood flow is redirected to the body's core. Breathing is controlled. The body's performing intelligently. And let me just say, the definition of health, because this will tie it all together for our audience, the definition of health is the ability to adapt, and the ability to adapt to countless different physical and environmental challenges. Now, that's not an operational definition that most physicians utilize, but that's the answer. That's in the literature. That's simply how it works. It's how we're designed to work. And so cold is another realm to dial in. We've talked about oxygen, we've talked about ozone, we've talked about exercise, we've talked about fasting. These are all those physical and environmental challenge therapies that were evolutionarily derived for. And we could talk about cold exposure a whole lot more, but that's the overview.
And then finally, in one of your last chapters, you talk about synergy, putting this all together. How does one do that? How do you bring all these things together?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that, because the chapter on synergy really is about how I do this work. This is a medical model that I have created. The model is foundational care, oxygen therapies, and challenge therapies. And the reality is it differs from everybody. You know, I don't have the luxury of taking out a physician's desk reference, looking up a drug, reducing that drug for someone's liver or kidney failure, giving a dose to a patient and sending them on their way in 5 minutes. This work is about looking at the whole picture of a human being in front of me, looking at their strengths and weaknesses, deciding, can they you know, what do they need to be optimized? Can they be challenged? How should they be challenged? Do they need support before they get challenged? And designing an intelligent program for somebody. And I have clients that will work with me for weeks to months before they can put some of these things together. You know, doing IV therapies and detoxification therapies and oxygen therapies and preparing for the more intense challenge therapies. But let me just say this: the work needs to be appropriate and strategic for each person. It is not a one size fits all model, and it's really important to get it right, because you don't want to push someone who's not ready to be pushed.
And so, you know, one of the things you put later on in your book, you have some references where you can get some information. I wonder if you might mention, there's also a number of tests that most people, when they go in for their annual physical, you know, Medicare doesn't cover a lot of this, and your typical doctor doesn't cover a lot of these tests. I wonder if you might just go over some of the ones that you think are important.
Sure. So, and you're right, most of these will not be covered, but I like to look at a host of different factors. So when I assess somebody, I'm not just looking at what's going on in the water compartment, the serum of their blood. I want to know what's going on at the cellular level. So I might look at inflammatory markers. I might look at the ability of somebody to exercise and recover. So I might get somebody's heart rate up and then have them sit in a chair and see how quickly now can they get their heart rate down. You know, that's a measure of heart rate variability. It's incredibly predictive. I like to do things where, we didn't talk about this, but the whole autonomic nervous system is comprised of the sympathetic and the parasympathetic systems. One is, you know, fight or flight, and the other is rest and recovery. And so I'll look at how fast somebody can switch gears, because that is an ultimate measure of health. I look at hormones. I look at thyroid and adrenal hormones and growth hormone levels. You know, there's a whole host of factors. Some patients, you know, come in with in need of detoxification because they have, you know, heavy metals or other chemical toxicities. And so I really think the point is, you have to really meet somebody where they are. You have to have an open mind to look at a host of these things. But I think it's important. I think this model has a lot of utility for almost anyone, not just somebody with a disease state, but somebody who wants longevity, somebody who wants peak performance. These are the things that matter and make a difference.
Doctor, I want to come back to your oxygen therapy, because I know hyperbaric can be quite expensive. I wonder, do you talk about things that could be more practical, like the EWOT or other forms of oxygen therapy on your site? And as we close, would you mind giving out your website? So if people would like to find this information or more about how you approach health, they can do so.
Sure. The best website for me is www.vitalityhealthchallenge.com. My book is Dancing with Darwin, Challenge Therapies for Optimal Health. It's available on Amazon. You know, I think EWOT, yes, hyperbaric oxygen therapy is quite expensive and can be hard to find. And there are companies out there that I work with where they make soft fabric, low pressure units that are safe for home use, and I'll set those up for people who are more compromised. But you know, for those, and as we talked about, for those people that can exercise on their own, EWOT is a very good way to go. And there are systems that are much less expensive. I talk about in the book, you know, it's important to have a system that has oxygen concentrators that put out high flow amounts of oxygen, at least 8 to 10 liters of oxygen or more. You want a system that has that utilizes a large diameter tubing, so that anesthesia tubing, so that you can breathe comfortably through it. There'll be a mask attachment on your face and tubing that connects to the oxygen reservoir. And so people can see those systems on my website. I'm available to help, you know, design different equipment for different people. But EWOT is a much, I don't want to say better way to go, but certainly a less expensive way to go for those people that can exercise on their own. And the recovery benefits from EWOT are amazing. They're astounding.
And on your website now, too, and you also even have a section, get the right exercise equipment. For example, there are some companies out there that use and have programmed the Sprint 8 program, which is very important.
Yes, the Sprint 8 program is fantastic. Phil Campbell's work in this area is amazing. He does have a line of fitness equipment that has his program built in so that, you know, I can go up to my elliptical, I can hit the Sprint 8 button, and the machine knows what to do. It gives me a 3-minute warm-up, and then it introduces the first cycle where I have to do a maximum exertion for 30 seconds, and then it backs down, gives me 90 seconds of recovery, and it's all, you know, built into the computer program. And that information is on my website as well.
Yeah, it was interesting reading your book. You talk about a heart rate monitor called MyZone. I've always used Polar. The thing I like about MyZone, it can track your recovery in your workout. It was quite a program.
Yes, I do like the MyZone a lot. It has a lot of advantages. One of those advantages is you wear a heart rate chest strap, and it transmits data in real time wirelessly to your cell phone. So you can put your cell phone, or it can be a TV monitor somewhere in the room. You don't have to stop intense exercise. You can glance at your phone or the monitor, and all the zones are colored. And so you can see your heart rate change by the colored zone. And in an instant, you can know where you are in recovery. And I'm just starting a YouTube channel and putting out a series of videos showing me doing cyclic exercise, showing me doing interval training, showing me using the MyZone. And so I would encourage people to check that out, because you can really see on YouTube what I'm talking about. And as you mentioned, Jim, the recovery is really important. And the YouTube channel is Vitality Health Challenge. And you'll see those videos. There's about 30 coming. There's about 5 or 6 up right now.
All right. Well, the name of the book is called Dancing with Darwin: Challenge Therapies for Optimal Health, Vitality, Longevity, and Peak Performance. We've been speaking with its author, Stephen Saltzman. Doctor, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, Jim, it's been a pleasure for me as well. Thank you so much.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.